Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Transformation Cafe with your host, Robin Misevich. Transformation Cafe. Welcome to the Transformation Cafe with your host, Robin Misevich. Transformation Cafe, a weekly half hour of light, topical conversation about health, wellness, happiness, personal growth, spirituality, and other insights. We're glad you're here. Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul. Now, let's get started and introduce our diners for tonight's show.
Well, I want to welcome everybody to the Transformation Cafe. I am your host, Robin Misevich, and we've got a couple of our regular diners. We got Miss Amy, Miss Amy Frost, my co-host. Amy, how are you doing tonight?
I am feeling very friendly.
Good. I am so glad. Yeah, we don't want any hostile friendships going on here. That's good. And Dr. Kim is joining us tonight. Hey, Dr. Kim, how are you tonight?
Hey, everyone. Nice to be here.
Great to have you joining us tonight. So tonight is our official first chapter in our cafe book club. We are doing the book Frintimacy. And if you go to transformation-cafe.com, there's all kinds of really wonderful information that we did in our last episode, which was TC303. Really kind of giving an overview and some highlights of some of the stuff that we're going to be covering and how we kind of got into it. But for any newbies out there or just tuning in, we really want to welcome you. And as always, we've got an international just group of wonderful diners that just kind of scoot up to the table on a regular basis. So we want to just take a moment to thank everybody for that and just kind of jump in here. So the first two chapters, we're going to be talking about the gap of intimacy. And Amy, you want to kind of jump in with that and kind of give your impressions of what that's all about?
Well, I think it's being really honest with yourself about where am I really at in relationships and taking the assessment. Like Kim had said that she had taken the assessment. And so it's about, and for me, what really came out of that was wanting to be more vulnerable. I think people perceive me as being very vulnerable. It's really taking it to the next step. And one thing I want to throw out, Kim, you said that you'd watched the video and that you really enjoyed that. Can you tell me what is it that you enjoyed about watching the video on that? Where I'm assuming is the one on Shasta.
Yes. Well, first of all, she's incredibly energetic and very persuasive in her message that friendship can save the world, and she came at it from all kinds of angles, and it was just very inspiring. So. It led me to staying up late on the East Coast to be on the with the, you guys tonight on the show, and I'm quite inspired.
Perfect. And I think
that's what friendship is all about, right?
I think so, and I do think friendship does change the world, or at least I think it helps us to change the world. You know, if you know you got somebody who has your back, I think you're willing to go do things deeper, more, take chances that you wouldn't take otherwise.
Yeah, so essential nuts that you're going to be getting.
Yeah. So we've got the workbook, we've got the book, and so just kind of diving in, when we've gotten to the first couple of chapters here, and you wanted to talk about, well, I think with the gap, a larger part of that is noticing, am I lonely?
Yeah, Jessa has this really interesting comment that she talks about the different ages. Like, you know, we've had the age of technology, we're having, you know, the different ages of information and industrialization and things like that. And she really feels that right now we're in the age of loneliness. And really, that's until I read that, I kind of went, huh? But then I really thought about it. And gosh, if you look at all the different things that we've had going on with just society, gosh, in the last, it's been slowly kind of growing with just what's been happening in the last couple decades. You can really see that. And she does a really great job of bringing in a lot of different authors and information that she's had going on about, you know, how that developed itself. So it's just right off the bat, I was talking to Amy about that a little earlier. And it just, you know, the one thing that, you know, going into looking at, loneliness, she was saying, was just as important and such an addictive behavior that we just consider it normal. And I was like, oh, my gosh, to even think that, loneliness would be right up there with, you know, a drug addiction or alcoholism or anything like that. But, you know, I really wanted to kind of bring that back off of, you know, if you go back a few episodes, we had done a couple shows with Jack Canfield and Dave Andrews when they had done the 30 Days to Sobriety. And she said that, you know, friendship is really the solution that we're looking for when it comes to sobriety. It's not a matter of getting off something. It's being able to feed and sustain and support people in the way that they really can thrive. And I just thought, I really love to hear what, you know, from that 30 Days of Sobriety, was there anything from that, Amy, that you're bringing into just having that be something that Shasta is sharing with us?
Well, on page 12, they talk about a study with rats, you know, so I'm not sure how closely related that is, although I have some friends that are rats at times.
Hey, I'm a rat. You look at Chinese New Year. I'm a rat.
I
go for that.
Yeah,
I'm going for that.
They love about you. So they talked about the opposite of addiction is not sobriety. It is human connection. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
I've really been sitting with that. And I think that's part of it. We use addiction, work or drugs or whatever it is, TV, to hide the fact that we don't have that connection. And a lot of times we don't have that connection because there's something that needs healed. There's a wall we put between us and other people. And he talks about, in other words, we deny our need for deep and meaningful connection. We are, in truth, refusing the medicine that can save us. How powerful
mm-hmm.
is that? Again, saying friendship can change the world. I think that's part of it. I want to kind of jog backwards a little bit here to page 6, where he talks about one of the obstacles to intimacy is not wanting to admit that we're lonely. And I love this that last sentence on page 7, and where she says, we're not lonely because we have nothing in our lives that matters. We're lonely because we want to share the things that matter to us with people who care about us.
Yeah, I thought that was great. You've got so many really good ones on there, too. So right about that, it says, so I'd like to clarify what I do and don't mean when I say we're lonely. We're not lonely because we don't have any friends. We're lonely because those friends don't always leave us feeling better than having spent time with them. Like me driving away from the cafe that day. She talks at the beginning of the book about the first story in the book is she had a group of people, friends that she had gotten together with on a regular basis, and they hadn't seen each other for a little bit because of the holidays. And when they got together, everybody had chair time except for her. And then she kind of had this whole processing thing when on her way home. It was just like, well, they're, you know, they're this or that because I didn't get to share. When in reality, you know, it's, we always want to take responsibility for ourselves and just say, you know, can I take a few minutes to share that? Or the next time that everybody gets together, you know, letting them know that, you know, gee, I want to make sure that I'm able to also let you guys know where I am and what I'm looking for when it comes to being able to have this time together. So it was really good for her to be able to, you know, put herself in that place and having it to be looking at, you know, what she really wants from that. She said, but from the lack of feeling the attention that she wanted from those relationships. So there was that loneliness of not getting connected in the way that she really felt she needed to. And I think that's what we're going to be talking about when it comes to the intimacy gap, is really learning what you need as a person and how to be able to communicate with that, with other people, and being able to have that be something that can fill you. Because ultimately, like we had talked about last time, is, you know, being a friend to yourself first and foremost and letting other people know what that would look like, and then being able to have conversations where everybody can really get what they need. And that's really what I think when we're talking about when it comes to intimacy, is learning what each person needs and not making anybody wrong and having that be, you know, it's like the 5 languages of love. We've done a really great show about that in the past, and, boy, that's been a bestseller for quite some time. So it's those dynamics of learning what each person needs and all of us taking responsibility for ourselves about what that's going to look like. And I think that's part of the loneliness of being able to feel like, you know, we've talked before on the show, too, about, you know, the one thing everybody wants is to be known and to be heard. And so I think that's just part of this whole thing when it comes to intimacy and having that be in us. So what do you think about, Dr. Kim, about when it comes to just this awareness of loneliness and how, you know, here it's an addictive, you know, it's addiction that we don't even necessarily want to recognize in society?
Yeah, I think that's true. I was in a meeting today, and I looked around the meeting. There were 30 people there, and 27 of the 30 people were doing something else other than being at the meeting. They were on their phones. They were on their iPads. They were reading. And I was like, why are we bothering to be at this meeting? None of us are connected. And I left feeling really alone and also lonely because there was nobody to share with. And so I'm present to that. And before the show, I was looking at my window at the stars, and I was thinking, wow, if only I had someone to share this beautiful starlit night with. And I had this pang of loneliness. You know, my two cats are here, but so I was like, you know, kind of this existential angst of what is it when we're not partnered with someone to go through life, and how is it different when we are partnered, and how friendship can really make the difference.
Yeah, your cats are like, yeah, I don't really care about that. They like look up and go, seen it, been there, done that, seen it, you know. Unfortunately.
Well, the good news is you can tell your cat anything.
A cat thing.
They're not going to argue with you.
So yeah, it's a cat thing. But boy, that's, you know, there's on chapter 8, on page 8, Shasta has this really wonderful thing. He says, you're not lonely because you aren't lovable. You're lonely because you're so lovable. We simply have room for far more affirmations, laughter, and honest conversations than we're actually getting. We're not lonely from the lack of networking. We're lonely because online profiles and Facebook check-ins don't provide the deep satisfaction that we crave. And we're not lonely because we want more meaningful and healthy relationships with people who love us well. What I call commitment friends, and then she goes into this, you know, they have the five types of friends that even when you go to the French Embassy workbook, and we talked about that in our last book. So just kind of review if you guys are newbies. If you go to FrenchEmbassy.com and you go ahead and join, there's two wonderful gifts. One book, one is the survey, and then you have this workbook that you can download, which is really, really wonderful. She's also got it. If you want to go ahead and create a small group, there's actually guidelines for creating that group, which I think is just really wonderful and generous with, you know, that Chest has put this all together. She said the problem arises simply that when there is a mismatch between the level of social connection desire and the level of environment provides, in other words, the sensation of loneliness, it's simply information that you are ready to feel more connected to others. I thought that was very profound. So when it comes to saying, well, I feel lonely, it's like it's a wanting to reach out and knowing that there's this connection that you're longing for. And I love, Dr. Kim, how you're just really pointing out that there were a lot of people in that room and I felt very alone. I think that's really something that's really wonderful for people to recognize that, you know, I mean, I know that I can personally say I've been in a stadium before when I've had, you know, a difficult relationship with, say, one person, and I'm in a stadium, you know, at a baseball game, and boy, did I feel very alone. And you can be in, you know, I mean, it's just a massive amount of people. So it's really, really an interesting phenomenon that goes with all that. So, Amy, did you have any ahas with any of that?
Yeah, and something that really comes to me, I don't think most people have really been intimate with a friend. Most people really haven't. And they don't know what they really need because they haven't had that experience. That's why I think it's good that we're having, you know, this book club and really looking at this as skills. Because I think, and it helps if we have something else to work on or to play with. You know, I think that's one reason that these painting parties, you know, wine and painting are becoming really popular, because it gives you a reason to come together and you're painting, but I think really cool conversations start happening. And I don't think you really know what you need in terms of intimacy until you really start relating to others and you really allow yourself to, you know, to go deeper. And that's why I think it's so exciting that, you know, that we are doing this work together. And I wanted to kind of go back for just kind of finishing out through chapter 2, and then we can kind of backtrack a little bit. But one thing that she talks about of our responsibility in the gap, and then what the most significant for me out of chapter 2, on page 21, she talks about Dr. Phil and his relationship rescue. And says, if you're living in a dysfunctional relationship with another person, it's because you have a dysfunctional relationship with yourself. But it doesn't mean we are dysfunctional. It only speaks to a dysfunction in the relationship. And she talks about how all relationships are three entities. And I've really thought about this in my marriage, but I haven't really thought about it as extensively in friendship. And the three parts are me, you, and us. And I know for me, it's really in my relationship with my husband, who am I, what is my mission, what is my purpose, and for him, and then our relationship has that too. And I've kind of quasi thought about it with friendship. I know, Robin, you and I certainly have talked about it, but it's like, I think that that's something that's really important that we're looking at, of course, being as healthy as we can be, you know, as our own person. And like you had said before, if you don't really love yourself, if you're not really kind to yourself, that is going to reflect on how you are with others. And so it's about how much can I be forgiving of myself, how much can I be loving of myself, and that will be reflecting in my relationships. So I think that's another really interesting way to start looking at relationships. What is my part? What is their part? And what is the us that we have together?
Yeah, I think that's really great, because it's kind of like, okay, that's the micro, but then we go back to the macro level of all these things and looking at the loneliness and just this gap and recognizing that it's a cultural problem. It's a cultural phenomenon that we're dealing with because of technology and everything else that we have going on it. So, we've done shows, too, about, you know, how can I have levels of more peace and more balance in my life, you know, and there's been suggestions of, like, once a week, I turn off my technology. I allow myself to just have a day where I'm not answering the phone. I'm not checking my emails. I'm actually with other people, and we're actually just engaged with one another, and we all make an agreement that we're just going to spend time together without that, you know, constant phone or, you know, the beeping of getting a message or whatever. So I think it's really wonderful because, you know, another part of when she was talking about, the age of loneliness is this, you know, the good news is that, you know, people are waking up to this. And I just thought it was so interesting. Andy was sharing with me about on NPR the other day, I'm not sure if it was yesterday or the day before, this really great story about how the starfish are all coming back. A couple of years ago, the starfish were basically disappearing because there was some kind of a problem with the disease. There was some kind of a disease that basically just was wiping out all the starfish. And this is basically on the West Coast, pretty much from the Mexican border all the way up to, like, the Seattle area. They were just all the, the ocean biologists were just noticing that there was just rampant amount of starfish that were just dying off, and they couldn't figure out what was going on. So there was some kind of a parasite or something that was getting involved. But the good news is that now there's just all these baby starfish. And, I mean, we're just talking a plethora. They're calling it the plethora of starfish, which I just think is so cool. So it's that ebb and flow of how we evolve, and then it allows us to just go to a brand new level of things. So these, you know, baby starfish were able to evolve from whatever had happened with the parents, and now they're just thriving. They're just thriving. So that's the good news of that, how, you know, things can change, and sometimes there has to be this drastic shift of something that happens. But it comes back with that much more strength and tenacity because it's learned from, you know, the different difficulties that it had in being able to evolve itself. I just think that's, you know, something that we really need to be able to embrace when it comes to, you know, the fact that, you know, we maybe the fact of loneliness is just all these different shifts that are happening on the planet, all these challenges and just, you know, these really tough times that we're having that really help us to give that new sense of tenacity so we can be thriving that much more in the future. So I really want us to say, you know, let's take a cue from nature and know that the starfish are just kind of a symbol of, you know, what's really happening in the ebb of life. I think it's so wonderful it's happening in the ocean. How perfect is that? With just a symbology of the ebb and flow of things. And, I mean, you think of the Gulf spills and everything else that has happened in here, you know, the Mother Nature knows exactly what to do to be able to just, you know, reinvent herself and have us being, you know, being able to thrive on the planet. Because, like, they were talking about lack of fish and things like that, and, you know, they're talking about all these bumper crops of fish and things like that, that's, you know, 2 or 3 years, and things have been able to regenerate themselves in just a brand new way. So just like that, you know, we are too. So I just kind of want to put that out there from just kind of a sideline of, you know, being able to look at things on more of a macro and micro level of, you know, just different things that are happening on the planet. To me, that's very telling for just the signs of what's happening and just different ways of how we're growing and changing. So any guys notice anything like that, and just something that isn't necessarily book related, but having to go along with that as well?
Well, I just think that's a natural process that things die off and then they come back. Do you know what I mean? And I think that's true in relationship. that you need to be open to certain parts, you know, dying off and coming back and growing forward.
And, you know, yeah, going through tough times, yeah, and going through those things that really help you and encourage you to go to a deeper level, because you're no longer, you know, having to live in the shallow waters of things. You're willing to go deep.
I'm here.
Or not, Dr. Kim. Or not.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm trying to talk. I'm here with tears in my eyes because I haven't heard your two voices for a couple of weeks, and I'm noticing how moved I am by just hearing your voices and the two of you and knowing your love for me and your love for the planet and for helping everyone who's struggling. And so sometimes when we're lonely, we miss people that we love, and then when they show back up, you know, joy. So I just, it's very different. I want to relate this to something you said about disconnecting, because I've started taking at least an hour a day of turning my phone off, which has really taken something. And sometimes on the weekends I do it for up to 4 hours. And
good for
you.
You
know, I watch the
That's awesome.
Clock towards the end of the 4 hours. But what I'm noticing is it makes me much more present to whatever I'm doing. And then when I am connecting with people on the phone or whatever, I'm much more present there as well. So it's a way to build presence in my life. And I think, you know, with Facebook and stuff, people, you know, friend people, I don't do Facebook, so I don't really know much about this, but it's, you know, we use that word friend, I think, very cavalierly, and a friend, a true friend, is a real treasure. It's someone to be cherished, and yet we throw that term around almost like a pawn on a chessboard, you know, inconsequential. So I think this friend intimacy is helping see that it's a word to be revered and a sacred. Friendship is sacred.
Yeah, because to me, you know,
Kim's point kind of leads into the workbook here, where she talks about even though loneliness goes largely unacknowledged, what is the evidence in my life that is sometimes true? My actions, my behaviors, my feelings, what I say to others, and like you're saying, hearing the voice and the connection, then you realize, oh, there it is. And so it's kind of paying attention. What are some of the cues so I can actually see that in myself and my life? I know for me, in answering that question, was there's moments of really deep sadness, because there are certain things I want to be able to share and reveal that I need a witness to that. And I think that's part of loneliness, is when you're not able to have a witness to the parts of yourself, great, not so great, that's all judgment, but things that not everybody can hear. Without them, oh my God, how do I deal with that? If that's true for you, how do I live?
Yeah, it's, in my work environment, you get kudos for sharing complaints, but there's no room to share successes or accomplishments, which makes it very toxic, because the currency is complaints and gossip and bad-mouthing people. And so it perpetuates the loneliness, because there's no connection really in that kind of low-level toxic currency.
Carolyn Mays talks about woundology and connecting on the wound level, which just keeps us all wounded and sick.
Yes.
Robin,
sounds like it's
in
time for a new suggestion box.
Yeah, there you go. So I want to talk a little bit about the five types of friends, and what she has us do is to chart where our friends are currently. I just want to walk through that really quickly. If you haven't done that exercise, I recommend that you do. So it's kind of on a continuum. The quote-unquote lowest level is a contact friend, which are people who are friendly whenever we see them, but we don't see them much out of a shared context. We go to the same church or the same meeting, something like that. Then there's the common friends. And those are, we intentionally spend time with these friends, getting to know them, but our friendship is still based on a shared commonality of some kind. And then now we're really moving more into a deeper type of relationship, and that's the confirmed friend. We share history with these friends that has bonded us, but our connection is not regular anymore. So when you connect with them, you're back in that connection, but you're not really, you know, that close on a daily basis. Then the fourth one over is community friends. We intentionally spend time together beyond the area we have in common. It feels normal to invite them into a concert on short notice, to check in with them on the weekend, or ask them if they're interested in starting a book club. That's interesting. And then the furthest on the continuum is committed friends. And we are intimate and consistently share our lives with each other. Our commitment extends beyond the other things that we hold in common. We regularly share our feelings with those, and they're involved in meaningful ways in our lives. So then what she has us do is to write down who is in what area, and then just kind of notice what's going on for me there, and am I missing something? So, Robin, did you notice anything? Did you get a chance to do that at all?
I did get a chance to do that, and I thought it was really interesting about, because I do a lot of networking and things like that, and so I found a lot of my stuff, you know, with community friends and common friends kind of thing with in business. And the way you would, learn about one another. So that really, you know, because like part of when I wanted to do this with this book, with my idea was like looking at it from a business perspective of being, you know, more intimate relationships with the people that you want to have as referrals and send to people when it comes to a sense of trust, if they're going to be taking good care of you and things like that. So one of the things that always comes up in our networks is talking about, you know, have the one-on-ones with people. You know, go and actually have lunch with people. And, you know, it's been deepening of connection with different people. So I found it, you know, really interesting. You know, I've got at least three or four people that I have that, you know, are the committed friends, which I think I'm very grateful for that. But, you know, it's, you know, one thing that Shasta always talks about, too, is the matter of, like, are you meeting that person with, you know, that's the way that you want to be with them. So it's that mutual agreement with each other about how you show up and be with each other. So, it's just like anything else, is like the healing of the intimacy gap is really, you know, evaluating where I am and what I want from everyone, and then being able to move in a direction with certain people that makes sense for me, that, you know, they're appearing to be a safe person, they're appearing to be somebody that I can be that much more authentic and real with, and being able to be vulnerable with that person. So I think that's just, you know, different things that, you know, part of that makes, to me, it makes common sense. But yet, along with that, too, is, you know, it's always good to be able to pause and look at those things and be able to evaluate it. So I really want to recommend to anybody that's, you know, looking at, you know, the Frenchmacy is to, you know, go ahead and spend a little time looking at the workbook, because there's some very thought-provoking questions that Jess has put together to really help you to step into that and, you know, loving yourself enough that you're going to give yourself time to, you know, be able to just sit with some questions. You know, that one thing I loved about when I had my time with Mark Nepo, I'd gone to that retreat, and if you go back to my episode along with our anniversary show, you know, Mark always talks about how wonderful it is to be able to sit with somebody, and Amy and I had talked about, you know, we kidded a little bit on the last show how Amy had read a really wonderful poem that was with the Celtic wisdom that's a friendship blessing, and I said, yeah, we should read it every show. But one thing that I think I love about the things that I've learned about poetry is that they are our teachers. And so Amy and I were talking about, wouldn't it be great if we both take, you know, each sentence and we take turns going back and forth just to maybe bring a little bit out of insights of things that we have. So, Amy, you ready to go do that?
Well, what I'm feeling at the moment is I read it last week. I'm feeling like you should read it this week.
Okay. I'll go ahead and read it. Any kind of comments, Dr. Kim or Amy, if you guys want to have that at the end of it, I'd love to hear what you'd have to say. So, a friendship blessing. May you be blessed with good friends. May you learn to be a good friend to yourself. May you be able to journey to that place in your soul where there is great love, warmth, feeling, and forgiveness. May this change you. May it transfigure that which is negative, distant, or cold in you. And may you be brought into the real passion, kinship, and intensity of belonging. May you treasure your friends. May you be good to them, and may you be there for them. May they bring you all the blessings, challenges, truth, and light that you need for your journey. May you never be isolated. May you always be in the gentle nest of belonging with your Ananakara, which is your soul friend. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's really
so that's
just,
why
you
we
know,
do the work, right? To get
that's
there.
Why
that's
I do
why
the
we're
work.
Doing
yeah,
that.
Exactly. You know, and to me, that's really speaking to your connection with soul and connecting with your sense of just the well-being that you can carry with yourself and being able to have that within yourself so you can share it and be available for another.
So next week is chapters 3 through 5, and we'll just keep wading deeper and deeper in. Or run away. Could run away.
And may you all be, yeah, may you all be starfish and be thriving. Hey, that sounds good to
me.
There
you
go. That's beautiful.
Following you in the ocean.
Yeah, exactly. We want to thank everybody for joining us. And Dr. Kim and Amy, thank you always for your insights and your sharing. And we love to hear from anybody in the at the TransformationDeskCafe.com. Go ahead and be listing any kind of ideas or comments and how you're really enjoying the book. We really love to hear from you on that. And, you know, feel free to be calling in next week when we're going through our next few chapters. So we thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time here at the cafe.
Good night.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the Transformation Cafe podcast. To learn more, visit transformation-cafe.com for show notes, guest information, and links to previous shows. You can also subscribe to the Transformation Cafe podcast on iTunes. Join us again next time at the Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul.